Chapter 11. Alvy put on her nightgown in her closet for some privacy, while Emma turned down the blankets of the bed and tidied the room. Once Alvy was dressed for sleep, she walked to her window. Through it, she could see the preliminary. The extinguished lights made her strangely sad, and it occurred to her that she'd stayed up working enough nights that she wasn't particularly tired now. Glancing out the window again, she said, "I'm not terribly tired. Maybe I'll head back to the plimmery." Emma scurried over and glanced out the window. "I don't know, miss. Might rain. Best to stay in tonight." It was too dark for Alvy to tell if it was going to rain or not, but she was a foreigner here, so she nodded and climbed into her bed. Emma wished her good night and slipped away. Alvy struggled to sleep. Excitement over the abstract and the discovery in material mechanics convention, most likely. Or perhaps because Emma had changed the sheets on the bed to flannel ones instead of cotton, and Alvy had never slept on flannel before. Whatever it was, Alvy dreamed about plastic arms and the convention when she did sleep, and when she didn't, she stared at the blurry starlight edging her curtains and wondered why she wasn't more tired. Around 2:30 in the morning, when she found that she was staring quite a bit more than snoozing, Alvy threw back the covers and got dressed. That was one nice thing about living in a house that employed servants. Alvy hadn't done her laundry once since arriving, yet her clothes were always clean and pressed and ready to wear. She'd need to remember to thank Emma for that when the sun was up. Thankfully, it was not raining, so her late-night venture would leave her no worse for wear. She ran a wide-toothed comb through her jungle of hair before twisting it atop her head. She donned her jacket. Her hardy Ohio coat had been too large to fit into her suitcases, grabbed a gaffer lamp, and slipped out the door. She stayed late in the preliminary more often than not, so this was not her first time wandering the house at night. But that was always coming in, not going out, and for some reason the two felt very different, like she was getting away with something. She rechecked her pocket for the plimmery key and whispered, "brighter," to her pre-enchanted lamp so that it filled the fancy corridors with its glow. She didn't want any stirring shadows to startle her. She hadn't the slightest idea when the servants got up, though she knew Mrs. Pfaff liked to sleep in. She turned the glow down to its lowest setting when she reached the back door and slipped outside. The shifting mosaic of metal tiles looked like water in the moonlight, rippling and twisting with unseen aquatic life. Alvy watched it for a moment, marveling. If only she could study more than one form of magic. She imagined smelting involved a great deal more sweating than was required of polymaking. She stepped onto the path, watching the movement of the tiles pause for her, as though frozen by the autumn chill. For some reason, that made her think of Bennett. Would he see water in the shifting tiles? Did he ever wake up in the middle of the night, only to feed the desire to work? Folding hadn't been his first choice, but he seemed to like it. He would have been a polymaker, or so he'd said at the train station. That made her like him even more. A couple more steps, and Alvy paused. Yes, he'd been very kind at the train station, hadn't he? Nice from the start. At the hospital, at the house, on the date. That's the sort of person Bennett Cooper was. The nice sort. What if he's just being nice? It would be a silly thought for someone like, Emma, to think. Emma, who was petite and pretty. Pretty in a way that didn't need cosmetics or fancy dresses or special serum to tame her hair. But despite what her parents said, Alvy wasn't exactly pretty, was she? She touched her heavy glasses. Not a lot of young people wore glasses, and if they did, they weren't glasses like hers, big, ungainly things that could compete with a headlamp. Alvy had tried smaller frames once, frames like Magician Avioski's, but they hadn't worked for her. Her original lenses were too thick for small frames. They'd constantly popped out. Besides, the narrow frames gave her a narrow window through which to see the world. It seemed God had given her a high-functioning mind as trade for good eyesight. At least Magician Pfaff had thinned out the lenses, so she didn't look so bug-eyed anymore. A cold breeze bit her exposed ears, So Alvy continued down the path, shivering. Prescription eyewear aside, it was just that boys, men, didn't tend to take an interest in her. That was a scientific fact. So why would Bennett Cooper, a dashing specimen of a man, suddenly bend the numbers? Her stomach squirmed and made her chest feel heavy. Reaching for her key, she tried to push thoughts of Bennett away by wondering if there were any snacks in her workroom, but that only made her wonder what sort of snacks Bennett liked, and it frustrated her to be thinking more about a folder than about plastic. "Bother," she muttered. But then Alvy heard something that sounded off. Even this late, there was plenty of ambient noise, a cold breeze rustling the gardens, or a skittering rabbit, or a buggy out driving late. But this was markedly the shuffling of feet, followed by the breaking of something distinctly plastic. She froze, the metal tiles swimming a few feet in front of her. "Cease," she whispered to the light, and it went out. Darkness swallowed the yard. Alvy blinked rapidly, trying to adjust her eyes. No noise. Had she imagined it? She stepped off the path, letting the enchanted tiles return to their watery swaying. The noise had come from the polymery, had it not? There was nothing else that had plastic in this direction, only the polymery. There was a distinct tapping of a hammer, chisel, being worked. But Alvy could see the polymery now, and none of the lights were on. Anyone who belonged in the polymery would have turned the lights on. At the very least, they would be carrying a gaffer light. A new chill tingled over Alvy's skin. Good heavens! Were they being burglarized? She froze, clutching her extinguished gaffer lamp, mind spinning. Was there a spell she could... Of course there wasn't, and she had no plastic on her anyway. She should run back into the house, but by the time she roused someone, what if... Ethel's arm was in there? All their prototypes. What if... She thought of Magician Azel and his scowls and did the one thing she hoped might help. She screamed. Alvy had a number of talents. She could factor large numbers in her head, for one, and she could write in shorthand with incredible speed if she didn't heed her penmanship. She knew almost all the rudimentary spells for polymaking, and she was fairly certain she could disassemble and reassemble the engine of an automobile in 6 hours and 4 minutes without having to consult a manual. She was also, apparently, very good at screaming. The noise hurt her own ears. It was so loud and high, evenly pitched, enough to stir a slumbering bird from a nearby tree. And though Alvy wasn't an orator or singer, she screamed for a very long time. Seemed that, beneath her well-endowed chest, she had a remarkable set of lungs. She screamed loud and long enough that several lights went on inside Briar Hall. When she finally ran out of air, her throat tingling, she thought she saw a large shadow beside the polymery move very quickly toward the fence bordering the estate, so she screamed again. Several policemen lurked about the polymery in the wee hours of dawn, along with Mrs. and Magician Praff, Mr. Hemsley and Mrs. Conway. A few other servants lingered by the back door, trying to peer over one another to get a better look at the scene. Alvy was quite cold, but evidence needed to be collected, so she couldn't go into the polymery, and she couldn't bear to return to the manor before hearing what the policemen had to say. So she huddled inside her jacket, cold hands pressed into its pockets. She let her hair down, and that helped. One of the policemen, carrying a clipboard, stepped out of the polymery and approached Magician Praff. Alvy hurried in that direction, her cold toes aching in her shoes.
"It doesn't seem like anything was stolen, none of the things you mentioned," the policeman said. "The burglar didn't get very far. He entered the workroom through the window on the north side and got as far as the foyer before fleeing. It's a mess, but the damage won't be too expensive to set right."
Alvy sighed. Her workroom, then. What a bother. But they were so fortunate the crook hadn't made it to the lab. The policeman took a pen from behind his ear. He turned to Alvy.
"You're the witness?"
"Yes, sir."
"Did you make out anything about the individual? Individuals?"
She shook her head.
"I think it was only one. I just heard it and saw a shadow." The policeman nodded, jotting something down. Can you describe the shadow? Black and shadowy? He glanced up at her. Alvy shrugged. I bet $20, quid, that it was Magician Azel. Alvy? Magician Praff's voice had a note of warning in it. What? She asked. He's practically threatened to overturn your work and tried to bully me into sharing your secrets. The policeman seemed interested.
Is that true?
Magician Praff sighed. I'm afraid so.
I don't know that we have any evidence to pin the man, but we can question him. Magician Roscoe Azel, I take it?
Mrs. Praff asked.
You know him?
His preliminary was also recently burglarized. Alvy pressed her lips together. Perhaps it wasn't him, but circumstances told her otherwise. The policeman adjusted his cap.
Seems to me it'd be much easier to simply melt one of the plastic windows and enter that way. Silent, quick, effective.
If one were a polymaker, Alvy pointed out, which the burglar probably was.
Of course, anyone could melt plastic with a torch or the like, but the light would give them away. Unless there's a tool that could impart heat without direct fire.
The policeman blinked a few times.
Yes, I suppose.
Alvy pushed up her glasses. Even so, if the window had been melted, the likeliest perpetrator would be a polymaker. Magician Azel would have known better than to use a melt spell.
Alvy, another warning from her mentor. The policeman added, any evidence pointing to Azel at this time would be circumstantial at best. We can talk to him, miss, but we cannot assume he had any part of this.
I can assume, Alvy thought, huddling into her jacket. To Magician Praff, the officer said,
I'll see if we can finish up in there and get the men out. Make sure to record and report anything strange that you might find, anything missing.
I will do that, thank you.
Magician Praff seemed haggard, possibly from lack of sleep, probably from having his lab broken into.
Miss?
Alvy jumped. Emma stood beside her, looking tired herself, though her maid's uniform was neatly pressed. Everyone looked tired. Mr. Hemsley would topple over snoring any moment now, Alvy was sure of it.
Sorry, Emma apologized and offered a quick curtsy. Are you all right?
She nodded as Magician and Mrs. Praff walked off with the officer who'd been questioning them.
Just a little frazzled, is all. But the preliminary is safe,
she nodded. Just a mess. The burglar didn't get far. Emma smiled.
I'm glad to hear it. You want help with a mess?
A sigh passed through Alvy's lips. I haven't even looked at it yet. It'll be all right. She started toward the preliminary.
Are you sure that you don't want a hand?
Emma hesitated, chewed her lip.
And that it's safe in there?
Alvy's shoulder relaxed a little.
I'm sure. The police have already been through it.
Thank you, Emma. We'll work it out one way or another. Though as Alvy turned back for the workshop, she frowned. The motive seemed quite obvious to her, as did the crook, but there was little she could do to prove the latter. At least the hands and arms hadn't been found. At least, as far as she knew, Magician Praff hadn't written down the newly discovered spell. Even in the abstract, he'd submitted to the convention. If anyone wanted that, they'd have to crack open his, or Alvy's, head to get it. Alvy spent that morning straightening her workroom, while Magician Praff personally installed new locks on the preliminary doors and windows. The burglar hadn't meddled with any of the old locks, but Alvy figured it was more for Magician Praff's peace of mind than anything. When she'd finished tidying, she stepped around to the front door, where Magician Praff was twisting a final screw into a hardy, smelted knob. He spoke without looking up.
These are specially enchanted to withstand smelters. There's an unlatch spell those magicians can use that releases nearly any lock, unless it's either exceedingly complicated or enchanted to withstand it.
He tightened the screw and stood up.
There.
Looks expensive, he chuckled.
It is.
She grabbed the knob and turned it. Just an ordinary door handle from this end. I suppose a plastic one wouldn't do. Though if Magician Azel was the culprit, that would be a very poor choice of lock.
No, even the strongest plastic can't hold up to the durability of metal. And I'd still need a key. The unlatch spell isn't included in a polymaker's repertoire. He pocketed his screwdriver and stepped into the foyer.
Come, I set something up for you last night. Fortunately, our burglar didn't get far enough to meddle with it.
Curiosity piqued, she followed him up the stairs, past the library and into the larger room over the lab. When she entered, she beheld a massive igloo of plastic, formed from thousands of tiny hexagons. Three could fit snugly in her palm. The thing was taller than she, about 8 feet high, and took up 2/3 of the room. It looked like a strange sort of carapace. A celestial turtle, maybe. The edges of each tile seemed to glimmer as if the magic were letting her know it was there. Her jaw dropped, and she pressed her hands over her mouth. Magician Praff grinned.
Recognize it?
It's the Imagidome, Alvi said through her fingers, walking around the beautiful monstrosity, taking in its opaque structure. It would take months to construct something like this, but she could see faint lines delineating sections. It came apart in wide pieces then, not as individual hexagons. This was the creation that had turned the Discovery Convention on its head 2 years ago. This had been the main feature in every magazine her papa subscribed to for months. Can I touch it? Her mentor laughed.
Of course you can touch it. I want you to try it.
She tried to suppress a nervous giggle and only half succeeded. She poked the structure. It was firmer than expected. She traced the tiny hexagons with her index finger. They tingled beneath her skin. Can I really? She asked, winding around to the door. It was only about 4 feet high and also made of hexagons. He gestured inside.
Off to you.
Squatting, Alvi shimmied inside the dome and stood erect within it. The plastic let in a bit of muted light, but once Magician Praff came in and shut the door, the space was almost entirely dark.
I'll teach you how to program it yourself before the convention, he said.
You will? You're bringing it?
Of course I'm bringing it. It might be old news, but it's not boring yet.
She saw the outline of his hand against the wall of the dome.
Image memory. Starry night.
The light snuffed out all at once, then built up in dark blue hues. Above her head, small, false stars burst to life, twinkling across the Imagidome ceiling. She gaped. She couldn't make out the hexagons anymore. She felt as if she stood somewhere else, staring up at a true night sky. Around the base of the dome formed silhouettes of grass, expanding out until they met the horizon, a field, and over there a tree. The grass and the tree's branches waved in a breeze Alvi couldn't feel. The lit heavens rotated slowly around one star immediately above her head. This is amazing.
This is 4 years of work, Magician Praff said. Revealing it was one of my proudest moments. I hope we'll have another moment like that come March.
The hand, she said, turning and taking in the loveliness of the scene around her, is very important. But this is exquisite. Magical. This was the gap that technology couldn't fill. This was the stuff magicians were made for. This was what she could create.
But in the end, it's pandering, really. Magician Praff touched the edge of the starry sky and murmured, cease.
And the otherworldliness of the spell blinked out, opening a strange sort of longing inside Alvi's chest. She rubbed at it. Magician Praff continued,
it's art, it's entertainment, it's an escape. But society can go on without those things. What we're doing now, Alvi, is making the fundamentals of life, movement, capability, better. What we're doing is restoring functionality to a young woman who thought those things were lost. Think of what we could do for veterans alone.
Alvi dropped her hand. The dreaminess of the Imagidome enthralled her, but she very much liked Magician Praff's speech. If they could push a little harder, work a little longer, they truly could better the lives of those who had lost limbs. And what next? Her mind spun with the possibilities. Alvi still swam in thought when she returned to the house on a break, enforced by Magician Praff. It was nearing the dinner hour, and Alvy would be eating with a family tonight, which she did a few times a week now, usually without consequence. As far as she knew, none of the Pratt children would be joining them this evening. As she began to ascend the stairs to her room, Mr. Hemsley coughed loudly behind her. She turned around.
"A letter for you?"
The butler held up a silver tray that had an orange crane perched on it. It was large for a male bird. Alvy's heart instantly began to pitter-patter. "Thank you." She hurried back down the stairs and grabbed the crane by its neck. Holding the bird to her chest, she hurried up the flight of stairs and darted into the privacy of her bedroom. Checking to make sure Emma wasn't hanging laundry in the closet or the like, Alvy plopped down on her desk vanity chair and unfolded the bird. Her hands trembled just a bit as she did so. A smaller, white songbird fell out first, blank for a return message. The inside of the orange bird read, "Alvy, I heard about the break-in at the Plimmery. Magician Bailey subscribed to the local news telegrams. Are you all right? I heard the burglary was unsuccessful. I hope all is well. Bennett." Alvy reread the letter. Not even 24 hours had passed, and people were already talking about it. Of course it would be news. Magician Pratt's name carried weight. She wished the letter were longer. In fact, she turned the unfolded crane over just to check. But he'd written her, and that made her happy. She read the note a third time, then carefully unfolded the songbird and wrote, "Nothing stolen, nothing important broken. We're all okay." She thought about adding her suspicions about Magician Azel, but neither the police officer nor Magician Praff had seemed pleased with her suggestion, so she decided against it, at least until she could find concrete evidence to support her theory. She thought for a long moment and, trying to match Bennett's tone, wrote, "How are your studies?" She stared at it for a long moment before commanding the bird, "Refold," and hurrying to her window. Alvy had never tried to open it, but it did open with a little leverage. A burst of cold air coughed onto her. "Breathe," she told the pre-enchanted spell, and the bird came alive. It must have already known where to go, for it hopped off her hand and into the cold night without hesitation. Alvy looked up at the sky. She hoped it wasn't going to rain. Given how poorly male birds did in wet conditions, it was a wonder Londoners used them at all. She shut the window and returned to Bennett's letter, reading it a fourth time. Something squirmed inside her. It wasn't precisely the most romantic letter, was it? Very straightforward, nothing poetic or flowery, just a note from a friend, or someone eager to make sure his sister's arm hadn't been lost. Alvy set the letter in her lap and slouched over it. The squirming feeling turned sharp, and she knuckled the sore spot between her breasts, rolled her lips together. She really liked him, didn't she? She rubbed the spot harder. Oh, bother. She'd almost forgotten this uncomfortable feeling of liking someone. She'd liked boys before, of course, but none of them had ever looked her way twice. But Bennett wasn't like those other boys, was he? He had written her, after all, and he'd taken her out. But maybe he really had done it just to be nice. For all she knew, Ethel might have asked him to, at least the second time. Alvy wasn't charming, she knew that. Sighing, she tucked the letter into a drawer of the desk and crossed the room to the closet where the tall mirror stood. She pushed up her glasses and looked in it, retucked her shirt into her pants. She had a trim waist, didn't she? Surely Bennett liked trim waists. She combed her fingers through her hair, or tried to. They caught on several knots. There were almost always knots in her too thick, too wavy locks. Plain and brown, not bright and blonde like Ethel's, or bold like those of the folder she'd met at the post office. Brown hair, brown eyes, a face half eaten up by glasses. She took them off and stepped closer to the mirror, so close her nose almost touched it. Fuzzy shapes comprised her face. She squinted, clearing them a bit, but she hardly looked right squinting. She put her glasses back on. She didn't have any pimples or wrinkles. That was a point in her favor, wasn't it? She stuck her tongue out at her reflection. What a bother. She didn't need a distraction now, not with the discovery convention looming ahead of her. and she had to plan her trip home for Christmas besides. It was little more than a month away. If only her heart would agree with her. Emma knocked at the door and poked her head in. "Would you like help choosing a dress for dinner, Alvy?" Alvy sighed and backed away from the mirror. "Might as well." Emma smiled and crossed the room. It was easier to let her pick something from the closet, though Alvy still insisted on dressing herself. She was 20, after all. 20 with 2 whole dates under her belt. 20 and never been kissed. She wondered if Emma had been kissed. Surely she had. But that was probably an awkward question to ask, so she didn't. Emma pulled out a slim, black dress, with thick lace around the collar and sleeves. "I know Mrs. Pratt is wearing blue tonight, so let's go with this one. Best not to match. Are we having guests?" "Well, no." Alvy smiled. "Whatever you think is best." Emma nodded and set the dress and matching shoes at the foot of the bed. "Emma?" "Hmm?" Alvy glanced at her reflection. "Do you think you could do my hair tonight?" Emma grinned. "I'd be happy to."